Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer, young Dickie Maltasante himself, Chris Herring. Chris, before we begin, do you remember when we talked about potentially starting a Sopranos rewatch pod on your very first episode of Open Floor? I wanted to quickly just let you know that I'm binging the series all over again in honor of The Many Saints of Newark's recent release. And just want to say, if it's not too late, like, I'm ready when you are to start that podcast. Hopefully you are also down.
I'm very much down, but I feel like it would be very weird if I take Dickie's character instead of the character that's actually got the same name as me, especially, you know, Chris.
Oh, that's a great call. That's a great call.
It is what it is, but I'm down. I feel like I might be biting off more than I can chew to dig right back into that series as the NBA season's starting, and I've got a class to teach at Northwestern, but hey. Somebody, if you clear it with our bosses and they know that's why I'm not turning in my stories, cool.
You have clearly more important priorities than I do. You have a book coming out. You're teaching classes. I'm just on my couch, shirtless, with a wife beater, watching Tony Soprano eat ice cream, and I'm living the best life.
That's what Tony Soprano was doing most of the time, too, so you're all good with that. In full Tony Soprano form.
Exactly. So we have a lot to get to on today's show, but first a quick shout out to all of our listeners for sending in fantastic emails this week. Please keep them coming in to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. In this episode, we're going to preview the upcoming season by answering some of the questions from the NBA's annual GM survey that the great John Schumann over at NBA.com puts on every year. Before we get to that, I want to hit... Yeah, John is the best. Before we get to that, though, I want to hit a couple emails. The first is from Ethan, who writes, "Hey guys, I've been loving the mailbag episodes you've been doing. My question is, what players who are possibly not in the league do you see getting picked up at some point later on this season? I'm thinking Iman Shumpert or Gerald Green. Best regards, Ethan from Las Vegas." Before I throw it to you, Chris, I'll just say that, like, I love this question because it allows me to speak about, I guess, wonder aloud why Isaiah Thomas isn't currently on an NBA roster. Just, I personally don't understand it. And I'm going to throw it to you and let you kind of give a name or two that's kind of on the tip of your tongue. But I want to circle back and talk about Isaiah in a second, because it doesn't make any sense to me. I'm not going to lie.
Sure. I'm going to go with Wesley Matthews, which I know that he had a...
That's a great call.
That I understand that he didn't shoot particularly well last year, but he still has utility and, you know, is a pretty good defender, obviously diminished on that side as well, but still he was starting from such a good place, and he had shot well the years before that and played with contending teams before that. So I think he's just kind of a plug and play guy. The other guy that I think about a lot that I don't necessarily think will end up in the league again this year, but Mirotić played pretty well. He had that really brutal series, and then he just literally left the country. And granted, he's not from this country anyway, but I was like, damn, dog, you didn't shoot that bad. Like, somebody will have you. You know, and he was with the contending team at the time. He's a stretch, you know, front court player. Like, he has a place in the league if he wants to be. I don't know what his contract situation is, but, like, he could be in the league still.
Speaking of him, the GM survey, I think he was number one for best player who's not in the NBA.
See?
So that's a great call by you. Can we talk about Isaiah for like 2 seconds? Do you kind of agree with me in the sense that it's just kind of like, am I being too aggressive here in not understanding why he's not on a roster? Or like, I look at like some teams that have roster spots right now that I think could use him. Like, you look at even the Brooklyn Nets with the situation with Kyrie Irving. You look at the Sixers with the situation with Ben Simmons, or the Nuggets with Jamal Murray, who's out for an indefinite amount of time. And I just don't understand. Like, you're telling me Eric Bledsoe is better for the Clippers than Isaiah Thomas would be, or why Isaiah Thomas couldn't be on the Bucks, or like, I think DJ Augustine is on a roster right now. I'm not sure what team. Maybe I get that wrong, but like, I just don't get why IT isn't in the NBA right now.
I always think this whenever I'm like, I could be a GM. You know why I might fail the job, or maybe why I would excel at it. I don't know, because I'm like you in that sense. Like, I understand why he's not. Mm-hmm. I understand that he's got shortcomings as a player. They're blatantly obvious what they are.
Sure.
Height, you know, defense, what have you. And that he might not ever be as fluid as he was, again, you know, as far as where he was at years ago before his injuries and his surgeries and stuff like that. But I would struggle with the GM role, I think, because I have that question a lot of times where I'll go back, and obviously I focus on numbers a lot. It's not the only thing I pay attention to. I feel like if someone's moving poorly, you can see it. But you look at Basketball Reference pages or their Synergy pages or their advanced numbers, and you're like, they're still doing a pretty decent job, like, and their numbers aren't so far off from what they had been in the past. Like, Matthews is a good example of that, where he certainly slowed down a little bit, but my thought is, whenever you're able to help be a contributor to a winning team in that role, and if you're shooting poorly but you have a pretty good history of shooting well, that I'm always a little bit surprised when those guys are 32, 33, and they're just gone completely. And that's kind of what you're looking at with certain guys. So I wouldn't be a good judge of talent, clearly, because I kind of feel like when I look at Matthews, I'm like, I was trying to figure out when I was listing people who aren't on teams that will be acquired later in the season, I was like, I'm sure someone has him, and I just don't remember which team he's on. I was like, nope, he's not on a team. So, you know, it's interesting that they're not. Maybe he's holding out for a certain situation. Maybe he thinks it would be better to sit out and wait. I'm not sure what his scenario is, but I'm surprised he's not out there. And Isaiah, we've been watching him do these open runs, scoring up, you know, 9 million points on people. I get that that's not the NBA, but he was such a great scorer before that you'd feel like maybe he gets a little bit more of a chance.
Yeah, he's 4 or 5 years removed from number I think he was 5th in the MVP ballot in 2017, like one of the best offensive seasons ever. I know that, obviously, as you said, the surgeries, the defense, it's all kind of knocked him off his the perch that he was on. But I just, you're not like, there's not 450 guys in the world better than him at basketball or like putting the ball in the basket. But real quick, like Iman Shumpert, who Ethan mentioned in his email, I was watching Dancing with the Stars with my wife earlier this week, and she was like, Iman Shumpert does this tango or whatever they do, the salsa, and she's like, how old is he? Like, why isn't he still in the league? And I said 35, and then I looked it up. He's only 31 years old. I was
where
like,
where did you get 35 from?
I just assumed, because I was like, why isn't he on a roster? I know he's not like the greatest player of all time, but it's just like, damn, 31, and he's just on Dancing with the Stars already? Like, this dude was on a title team like 3, 4, 5 years ago.
This is just a hypothesis, because I think he's good enough to be out there as a defender, if nothing else, and a guy that can knock down an occasional three. I feel like there's a different set of rules. You remember when Willie Cauley-Stein was coming out of college, and there were all those really stupid maybe not stupid, but like to me overblown concerns. Oh, this guy actually likes to do things other than play basketball.
Right.
And I feel like there's one set of rules for that if you're Damian Lillard, or you know, if you're Shaq or you're Kobe and you have a rap career.
Yeah.
Versus like if you're Iman Shumpert and you're, you know, probably somewhat more of a fringe guy, that you do TV, that you rap, that you have Dancing with the Stars and all these other things, like how much other interest you have outside the game, that, you know, the way that people tweet, I really hope GMs don't think this way, but the way people tweet where they're like, oh, you should be in the gym working on that jump shot, or, you know, Ben Simmons, you're not allowed to watch TV until you can make 65% of your free throws. And then I wonder if to some extent if GMs think that way too with guys that are like fringe level guys that they feel mm-hmm. like could be a bigger part of the rotation if they didn't have as many off the court interests. So I don't know. But Shump, I mean, I remember the first year that he was really out of the league and I was kind of like, how did that happen? Because he's very talented at certain things and he's still young enough and still athletic enough. So who knows?
Yeah, and our producer Shelby is letting us know that Iman Shumpert has a reality show on E, the E Network, and I did not even know that.
I did know that because of him and his wife, between that, I watched of the shows that I do watch and make time for, he was on The Chi this past season, but he's married to Teyana Taylor. He was on The Chi all season. He had a really, in the finale, had a really kind of messed up last scene. Not that he did anything that was, I mean, it's acting, but I was like, oh, how dare he? Maybe he doesn't deserve to be in the NBA based on what he's doing in the show. ruining one of the characters. But anyway, I don't know. I do wonder to some extent if there are people that are of that opinion in the league that actually are decision makers in the league that they would prefer for guys not to really have that many outside interests if they're not the star of a team. I don't know. I would hope that that's not what it is.
Yeah, I was not expecting so much Iman Shumpert talk off the top, but
it's your fault. You set up this podcast.
You're right. It is my fault. Okay, our next email is from Andre, who writes, I'm a longtime listener from Brazil. In the last pod, as you were ranking team rebuilds, you spoke about the impact of sheer luck in the trajectory of NBA teams. This brought back bittersweet memories of the Brandon Roy, LaMarcus Aldridge, Greg Oden era for my beloved Trailblazers. Shout out to you, Shelby. I know you're a big Portland Trailblazers fan. Apologies for this email. Recently, I read about their record playing together, a whopping 50-12. So I was wondering, what do you guys think are the most disappointing examples of what-if teams in the history of the league? What teams did not live up to high expectations, whether it was because of bad luck, bad fit, or any other reason? Thank you so much, Andre. That's a wonderful question. For me, the first team that popped into my head was just the Oklahoma City Thunder trading James Harden 9 years ago.
Yep.
This month. Like, that's just like the most obvious.
That was the first one on my list too.
And I wrote this, I wrote the cover story for SI's NBA preview issue, and it was about Trae Young and the Hawks, and kind of the Hawks as this young team that's trying to put everything together and build on last year's momentum. And during my interview with Nate McMillan, when we were talking about the need to sacrifice minutes and shots and touches as a young player, he brought up Harden like immediately. I don't think this quote was made the story, but he just brought up Harden and was like, yep. Yeah, like Harden was just like, if we have a James Harden here, I don't know if we do, but a guy who's super talented, who's just like, I want my own team. And that's something that as a head coach, like, I can't do anything about that. Like, he wants his money, he wants his minutes, but there's only so many minutes that go around. And so it's nobody's fault, but that's the first team that popped up. And then the other one real quick, and then I'll let you throw a few out if you have any, Chris. Just like the process era Sixers, like from the beginning of Hinkie to now. And it's like, you look at the drafts and the trades and like, assuming Ben Simmons does not ever play again for the Sixers, which seems likely. It seems like if they do trade him, they're not going to get Dame Lillard or Brad Beal back. And it's like, if Joel Embiid suffers a serious injury, God forbid, like, what is there to show for that whole thing? It's like, they got nothing. So that's a big if across the board. You've got Fultz, the Tatum-Fultz trade. You got even just like Mikal Bridges, trading Mikal Bridges away. Jahlil Okafor instead of Porzingis, which, you know, whatever, but that's a pretty big whiff. And obviously, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have drafted Simmons, but how that all played out has been a total disaster of late. So that's another one that's, I'm just like, things could have gone much differently here. It didn't have to be so bad.
Yeah, no, that's a good answer. I that's an answer I had not thought of, quite frankly, because like you said, I think it probably requires one more thing to go wrong before you can really say that. But, you know, Joel Embiid is not the healthiest, you know, has not been the healthiest NBA player, NBA star over the last few years. So it's certainly feasible that it could happen. I started with OKC as well, which I think they're the biggest cautionary tale there is. Anytime you think of OKC, and I think even you bringing up Philly, where you think of a team that has two surefire young stars, and then it's like, oh, well, maybe something goes wrong, and it's not the case. Orlando with Shaq and Penny come to mind as the idea of not getting it done before, you know, before that situation kind of blows up. A team that I thought about, which is probably just because I was more local to it, I guess I was living in New York, but it was still something I paid a lot of attention to. Those Bulls teams with Rose and Noah, I don't know that you could say that they were like definitely going to win a title. You can't. But I think they had the best record in the league for 2 years in a row. And you felt like nothing was really going to stop them from being in that conversation, that they lost to LeBron in the first year once they had that team formed. But then they went and they upgraded a little bit. They'd been injured that whole year, the next season, including a lot of Rose injuries. But then I think when you look at it, so one of the things that prompted this question was the Roy Aldridge-Oden thing with how great their record was when they played together. And I remember that was the year the Bulls had Rip Hamilton and Boozer. And it literally felt like, as someone that watched a lot of Bulls games, you'd watch a game and they'd always have three or four starters, but never all five. And when they had all five, they were basically unbeatable. And I went and looked at it. It wasn't quite as many games as I remember, but this proves the point that I'm saying is that they never had all five guys. They were 13-2 when their starting five played together that year. They just never played together. And even when they had four of the starters, I think they had like an 800 winning percentage. They still had the best record in the league, even with a starting lineup of just 15 games that they had their full starting lineup. They still finished with the best record. And Rose looked really good coming back from all that time off. He came back right before the playoffs started, and then he tore the ACL right away. And that part to me is you know, something that I think about a little bit is, would they have been able to catch Miami at some point had it not been for that? And I guess we'll never know the answer to that question.
Derrick Rose was like, you know, I'm watching these Ja Morant highlights right now in the preseason, and I think Ja's going to have a breakout season. He's just going to be fantastic. But, like, it really reminds me of just how ridiculous Derrick Rose was. Like, I think people are asleep. Maybe people sleep a little bit on just the early parts of his career when he won MVP, youngest player in NBA history to win MVP. And there's been a lot of stuff in his life since then that hasn't been great. But athletically, just he was on another level. And that year that he tore the ACL, the first time I remember watching that, I was watching it. I wasn't really covering the league full time at the time. And had, you know, emotional investment in the Boston Celtics and was just like, you know, the Celtics are not going to do anything this year because there's the Heat and then there's the Bulls. And I thought the Bulls were the best team in the NBA that season. And when he went down, it was like, damn, because I thought that the Bulls were, honestly, I thought that they were going to win the championship that season. Like, he was just so good and they were stacked. Like,
they were better
in his prime. Luol Deng, great team.
They were better than they had been the year before. I mean, they basically had reached a point where, to some extent, it felt like their bench was their second best player after Rose. But they had really solid, like, they just fit really well. And, you know, it felt like Rose had gotten better. He wasn't going to win the MVP again because he'd been out, but he'd gotten better. And the team just felt like they had a rhythm that was really nice. You know, I don't know. They might not have ever won, but I kind of felt like Miami got a little bit of an easy path by the Bulls not being there anymore.
Yeah, so that's a really good call. Now I want to jump in. You know, we teased this at the top of the show. John Schumann's annual NBA GM survey, which I love every year. I think that sometimes it's kind of clear that you know, GMs aren't losing sleep over how they're filling out this thing, even if they are filling it out at all, which I'm a little dubious of sometimes. But there are always questions in here that I love and I find fascinating. So I plucked a select few out, and I'm just going to throw them to you kind of rapid fire, and we can go through them. And I think this is a really fun way to just, you know, take a broad look at the NBA, where everybody is, and preview the 2021-22 season, which is like basically starting tomorrow if it hasn't already started. So, I mean, let's start just like super big picture and anticlimactic, but just like, who do you think is going to win the finals this year, man? Like, I thought that the Nets are like, I would say the Nets are the clear team for me, but I can't say that they're that clear if this Kyrie thing is going to be.
Can anybody?
This Kyrie thing.
Yeah, I don't know that anybody could say that. I'm going to go with the Jazz. I am.
Whoa! I was not expecting that.
Why
love
are you
it.
Always like this, man? Like, I feel I like I it. Say. I say that I think that Philly will finish in the top three, and you're like, whoa, 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 they were the best team last year. The Jazz had the best record last year and didn't change their damn roster. Like, it's not that surprising that maybe to win the whole thing, it's a jump. Certainly, it's not the same thing as saying that you think they'll finish with the best record. I think even in the survey, there were a pretty decent chunk of the GMs that said they thought the Jazz would finish with the best record in the West.
Yeah.
I just kind of feel like they address the things that they, and I've said this on our pod before, I felt like they quietly addressed the stuff that really messed them up in the playoffs. And whether that's enough to get them all the way over the hump or not, we'll see. But they certainly addressed that. I think Whiteside will be something that we'll have to sit and watch. It'll be a day-by-day process. But they have enough offense, in my opinion. They're going to have one of the best defenses, if not the best defense, this year. It'll be interesting, and they have small ball fives now that they can roll out. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, and I had this in my story today about just kind of break in case of emergency. I feel like Rudy Gay and really Eric Paschal, the fact that I want to say those are two small ball fives that played well against them. And I'm always curious about whether GMs make moves for guys that really make life difficult on their own teams, or if that makes it more apparent to them that I've got to get this guy. But the fact that they went out and got two guys like Eric Paschal kind of is like a diet version of Rudy Gay, you know, in terms of like the way he's built, the way he, well, I guess he's probably a little bit stronger than Rudy Gay in terms of the way he looks, but you know, size wise, skill set, relatively mm-hmm. speaking. And the fact that they literally got two guys that kind of have the same situation, so to speak. They were clearly aiming to fix that particular problem. And I think that they did it. And I think that they're already really good to begin with. And so the idea that they'll be the one seed and potentially win the whole thing, to me, is more my having questions about the Lakers and having questions about the Nets, quite frankly, and just the Jazz kind of being status quo and fixing the stuff that we knew to be problematic for them.
I love that pick. I am genuinely surprised by it. I think if I'm being hot takey, real hot takey, the team that I want to pick real bad is the Los Angeles Clippers.
What? I want to hear why. I demand an explanation, sir.
Okay.
I thought you were going to say the Lakers. I'm like, that's not a hot take.
No, that's not a hot take. They could win. The Lakers could win. I'm not picking them.
No, of course. Yeah, that wouldn't be a hot take because they could win. And I think most people would acknowledge that they could.
So acknowledging that I would not put a dime on the Clippers to win the championship, I like a lot of the things that they did in the offseason. I like their continuity. I like the fact that Kawhi Leonard signed that long-term deal as opposed to the 1-1 and then explained why he did it in that he thinks he can – there's less pressure on him to kind of come back, and he feels like he will come back. If he signed the 1-1, he would have not come back. And played this season. You know, if there's anybody, any star, actually, I guess Giannis is probably the other one, because it's like I thought his knee like snapped in half and then he came back and had the greatest finals ever. But Kawhi is the other one where it's like you have a serious injury. Everyone's kind of just saying that you're out forever. And the man is also kind of like a Terminator in a lot of ways. So it would not shock me if he came back in April at the very end of the regular season, and you know, they have like they're like the fifth seed or something like that, which I think they could do. I think that's possible with the roster that they have, the coaching staff that they have. And then he comes back and eventually looks like the guy that is a top five player in the world. So that's the case for the Clippers, and I'm not saying that's going to happen. If I had to pick a team, I'd still pick Brooklyn. But that's my case for the Clippers, and just me being ridiculous.
If your thought is that Kawhi can come back and contribute in a Kawhi sort of way, then sure. I don't think that's a hot take. I think it's more a question of can he? How does he come back? How does he look? And how much time, how much runway does he have before he comes back? But before the games matter more. And, you know, before you throw him into the fire, which, having written my book, the Knicks brought Ewing back after a really horrific injury same season and tried to bring him back in the second round when he hadn't played for like 138 days. And it was, It was rough, you know, trying to go up against those old Pacers defenses. Trying to nurse a shattered wrist, you know, come back from a shattered wrist. So it's different with Kawhi. I don't think he fully ruptured his ACL or tore his ACL, which is helpful that he's not starting from ground zero with that. So it's in theory he could come back, and if he's anything like his Terminator Kawhi self, it's more than feasible that he comes back, I think.
Yeah. Okay, so let's jump around a little bit. The next question I have for you, Chris, is this is my favorite question, actually, out of all of them. I'm just going to say right now, if you were starting a franchise today and could sign any player in the NBA, who would it be?
You want my answer to it? Giannis. It's Giannis. Which, again, like maybe I'm just kind of taking the obvious answers here, the best team record-wise, the guy that just won the, you know, two out of the last three MVPs just won the title. But he's what, 26? Is he 27 yet? Did he just turn 26? I can't remember. I mean, but he's got years until he turns 30. The thing that we're holding out for with him is the idea of, you know, can he develop more of a jump shot? Can he get more consistent from the line? Even if he doesn't, if this is his floor, good luck with that, you know, in terms of trying to stop me. We now see how you go about building a team around this guy. You know, I think the interesting question for a lot of people that I don't think we've ever really come out and asked, there's no need to ask it since they just won. Could they have won this title without getting Jrue Holiday if they just kind of held on to Malcolm Brogdon and instead of locking in with Bledsoe? Like, so I don't think it has to be this particular team where it's just the perfect storm of these guys. I think if you had another really solid guard that can kind of play up or down a position or what have you, you know, and I think that Jrue Holiday is a little bit more talented than Brogdon, certainly. But, I think that they could have won this with a couple different guys. Like, if they'd gone out and gotten Chris Paul, and Chris Paul had gotten healthy, you know, if they had been a suitor for him and been willing to go into the tax for him, I don't think it was just this team. Giannis is just so good that I think you probably could make this work with multiple guards, with multiple iterations of this team. They did it without a starter. You know, they won this title without one of their starters being healthy, without him playing. So I would feel really good about building a team around this guy. Like, he is pretty indestructible, as we saw with the knee. So I would pick Giannis and not really lose any sleep over the idea of picking him.
Giannis is like that's a bulletproof answer there. Turns 27 in December. Just look that up. So you're getting, I don't know, like 6, 7, maybe 8 more like really good years out of him, and there's always the possibility of him becoming a league average 3-point shooter at some point also, which would just take him to a different level. So that's a wonderful pick. I don't think that's wrong. I don't think there's any wrong answer here. I am going with Zion Williamson, and I have a stat for you, Chris, because I know you love stats. There are 94 players who, in their second season, averaged at least 20 points per game. 94 in NBA history. 20 points per game. Zion last season, it was his second year, averaged 27 points. Had the highest field goal percentage, effective field goal percentage, true shooting percentage, two-point field goal percentage. Out of all 94 players by a decent margin.
Wow.
So he did that obviously during the weirdest, one of the weirdest seasons ever. He did that with a lot of minutes next to Steven Adams, a lot of minutes next to Eric Bledsoe. Very little spacing around him, as we've talked about it on the show ad nauseum. His defense obviously is his defense, and I would assume and hope and pray if I were to build around him that that would get better at some point, or we could hide it a little bit in the playoffs. That's obviously not a question for Giannis, which is why you chose him. but just offensively, like I don't know what his ceiling is. It's like historic level stuff when you just compare him. And I know all this stuff because I wrote a piece about Zion that should be published next week about the potential of a third year leap that is just absolutely scary and completely changes everything about the NBA. And
beyond the leap he took in year two? Ooh, that would be scary.
Yeah, right? Yeah, so if he, you know, there's a lot of areas of his game that can still improve that there's no reason to believe that they won't offensively. And just watching him evolve on a team that now has a little bit more three-point shooting, I think he's just an absolute nightmare. There's no answer for him. And having him on my team, like, during his prime, let alone – right now he's 21 years old. So I'm all in on Zion, and I'm not I also understand there's, like, the injury stuff, and that's really worrisome to me. But I don't care. I'm going with Zion.
I'm not going to fault you for doing that. I mean, he was certainly someone I thought about. And I think whenever you and I podcast, I feel like that's generally where you and I disagree a little bit. We did the top 100. I took Giannis and I cited health. You know, we're doing this. I thought about Zion. I would say that health is one of the reasons I would probably hold him out. I don't have doubts that he can get a lot better on defense and will get a lot better on defense. With that athleticism, we've seen what he was able to do at Duke defensively. Even with Towns, somebody like Towns, like when you see people that can do that on defense at the college level, where they're just that much more athletic than other people, you tend to feel like they can make it work defensively, or they can get a lot better at some point if and when they just decide, I'm going to get better at this, and they can. So I don't have that concern. It's just health for me.
Was there anyone that you would have between Giannis and Zion? Like, obviously, there's Luka, there's maybe Tatum.
Probably Luka.
There's Trey. Luka, yeah.
Probably Luka's the guy that I think about. I mean, I don't think I've ever said this on this podcast. My dad, when I went to high school, there was a guy that I grew up with named Julian Wright, who was a lottery pick with the Hornets at the time when they were in New Orleans. And
Kansas? He went to Kansas?
He went to Kansas. He was All-American at Kansas.
Yeah. Okay, I remember.
So he was a friend of mine and a kid I grew up with, played high school ball with. And my dad would always tell me, and I never told Julian this, but maybe I did once. My dad never saw why people hyped Julian so much. He was like the best player in the state of Illinois, which, you know, Chicago's got a long history of really, really talented high school players. And so he was Mr. Basketball here. And my dad's like, I know he's good. I mean, obviously, he's the best player on your team, but I just don't see it as far as how people are talking about the idea of the NBA for him and all this other stuff. Then my dad watched him play at Kansas, and he was like, now I see it. Because he was playing with y'all, and y'all weren't that. We were really good, first of all. We were really good, but he was like, y'all weren't anywhere near his level. And so it kind of took me being able to see him with other guys that were of his caliber and of his status, where he was throwing passes that you guys weren't in position for. He was just a step ahead of you guys, like more than a step ahead of you guys. Mm-hmm. And then when he played at Kansas, I saw it. So I think about that a little bit with Luka sometimes, where he makes his teammates better, but if he had better teammates, like if we would think about him differently and if he would be the answer to the question of who you would want to start a franchise with. He's not on a bad team, but he just doesn't have that many other guys that are anywhere near his level. And it makes me wonder a little bit how much more positively. I think most people would love to start a team with Luka, but I think in order for him to kind of be that firmly in the conversation where you'd rather have him over Giannis, he probably has to show a little bit more, or his teammates have to show a little bit more, just to feel like you can clearly win with him. He still hasn't won a playoff series yet, which isn't really his fault, but it's hard to kind of say start a franchise with that, you know. So we'll see. I think he'd probably be in that conversation somewhere as well.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Do you remember real quick? I don't want to like blow up Julian Wright, but every time I think of Julian Wright, there was like the breakaway windmill dunk, and he just like blew a tire.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't be bringing. I don't mean to.
I think it was against Colorado, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't mean to be rude to Julian Wright. Shout out to Julian Wright, wherever you are.
He's my boy. Okay. I'm going at him like that.
I know. I'm sorry.
Good dude. Yeah.
Okay, Chris. So which team, next question, which team will be most improved in 2021-22, in your opinion?
Chicago. We've talked about this one a little bit, too. I know you and I agree with some elements of it, maybe not all of it. I have not gotten a chance to watch them yet. I've been really tied up all week with just trying to get a lot of stuff done. So I haven't watched much preseason yet, but I've got
You missed DVR the Alex stuff. Caruso double-double?
Yeah, yeah. And people here were talking. I mean, my phone was blowing up. You would have thought that, I don't know, that I feel like the first time my friend saw me on national TV with SportsCenter or something, they were blowing up my phone. You know, you would have thought I had a 90-point game on ESPN or something. It was just a SportsCenter hit. That's the way my phone was blowing up the other night with how they looked on offense with my friends that are Bulls fans. And just one game, you know, not against an all-world opponent or anything like that. But I think what we were talking about, what we've been talking about is, like, look, you don't have to love the Bulls and what they did this offseason to recognize that they're going to be a really good offense if they're anywhere near healthy. Like, they just are going to be. And, you know, the questions about their defense are fully fair and completely fair. But I also think that the Bulls – I saw a stat the other day. I was like, that can't possibly be true. That they've got – do they have fewer wins than any other team since they traded Butler away?
I saw Ricky O'Donnell, my former editor at SB Nation, tweeted that. And I did not fact-check him, but he would know.
I didn't
know.
Either because it almost doesn't sound right. Like, because they've been horrible. That's strong. They've been bad, but they've never been, like, downright horrible. And I feel like everybody else, I feel like they've been so horrible at one time or another that you would just assume they had to have been worse. But they have been consistently like a high 20s, like low 30s win team. And they didn't get to play in the bubble, so they didn't get to accumulate more wins like a team like Phoenix would have, for instance. So it certainly could be true, but the fact that we have to debate it and the fact that it may very well be true because you saw the stat as well, like, holy hell, like, they don't have to do much to improve. And if they have an elite offense, that would be an improvement above the idea of, like, they'd be elite at something. I think they had a top five or top six defense once on maybe one of those Boylan years. But, that you know, they should be good. The fact that we're talking about them being, like, even if you think they'll be a 7 or 8 seed, if you think they're going to be in the playoffs, that's more definitive than we've been able to be about them for years at this point. So I think they'll be improved, and I feel like of the teams that you look at that could improve, I know you've talked about Boston a little bit, and I think that's a completely fair answer, but I kind of feel like Chicago has more room to improve just because of how bad they've been the last few years.
So real quick, I just looked this up, and Chicago does have the lowest winning percentage since Jimmy Butler was traded. Wow. 33.9%. Yeah, they have 6 fewer wins than the New York Knicks, playing 1 fewer game than the New York Knicks. So that's tough because you got Cleveland stat. Down here. You got Detroit. Right. You got Orlando.
Like,
Phoenix, as you
Cleveland
said.
Cleveland won more games than them? Like, I'm trying because that's such a wild stat to me. I'm like, wait, so is that mostly because of LeBron? And, like, maybe LeBron had one last season with Cleveland before, you know.
One,
but even
yep,
if
there was one last season, yeah.
So then that's why. Otherwise, I was like, there's no way Cleveland's won more games, but even if that's all it is, like, that the Bulls have had better rosters than Cleveland for most of that time, and the idea that they would be that much, that's an insane statistic, but that tells you, like, how irrelevant they've been, or, like, relevant to where it feels like they're okay, but they're still worse than Cleveland. So, yeah, I think their room to improve is just so much more massive than a team like Boston or anything like that. You know, if that would be your answer, a team like that, I think that Boston will improve. But I think that the Bulls just have way more room too.
So I'm not going with Boston. I like your. Okay. I listed 4 teams here, and I did write down Boston, but they're more of an honorable mention. I do think they'll be better. They were 500 last year. I think they'll be a lot better. I'm going with the Minnesota Timberwolves, and it's along the same philosophical rationale that you had, where just a team that's been very, very bad for so long, I think, will make a jump. Like, I think that they will compete in the play-in. I don't know what seed or anything like that. I think they will make the play-in. I think Towns will have a big year. I think adding some of the pieces that they did, like I just love the Patrick Beverley signing.
Me too.
And Patrick Beverley, you know, gets hurt a lot, and he's not the youngest guy in the league, but I just love what he brings to the locker room, his personality. They just haven't had guys like that for a really long time, and they were the youngest or like one of the second or third youngest teams in the league last season. I love Anthony Edwards. I love Jaden McDaniels. I think they're so talented. D'Angelo Russell is now at the point where he might be a little underrated with just people writing him off as good. He's like a pretty good player. I mean, like, he's not, I think that, you know, the max contract and everything is not doing him any favors.
Sure.
But they have a lot of talent, and, you know, if they're excellent on offense and even, you know, 16th, 17th, 18th on defense, which I think is possible with Chris Finch, who's just like a really smart. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Sure. The question's defense and rebounding and all that. But I love the head coach there. They have a really respectable mind there. So I think that they're going to make a big jump. So that's the team that I'm kind of looking out for and really excited to watch.
I like that pick.
Yeah. Okay. So along the same lines of that question, I think a little bit is which team has the most promising young core in your opinion, Chris?
You know what? So my answers today have been boring as hell. I'm just going to be real. I, at one point, was going to go with Phoenix. I was like, that's cheating to some extent. But you've got all those guys that you think of as being younger guys. I mean, Booker is 25. So Booker, if that starts to get outside of the range of where you can talk about, like, young core, so be it. But, like, I just think that, you know, Chris Paul kind of made us stop thinking about the fact that's still a really young team.
Sure.
Obviously, Bridges is a young guy. I guess Bridges is older just because he stayed in school for, you know, handful of years. But Book, Ayton, and Bridges are all young. So, like, I feel like you could talk about them. I still think I would probably go with Atlanta, though, just because
that's
they've
my
got
pick.
Guys up and down that roster that are just so young. And, you know, we'll start to think of them as not being as young now that we've seen Trae on the stage. The same way I feel like people will probably have that thought about Luka and other guys like that is like once you've seen them get there a lot, you start to forget how young they are. I mean, the fact that Giannis is only 26 is an example of that. The fact that he's only a year and a half older than somebody like Booker. But you forget about it the longer they've been on the stage. But, you know, Atlanta's still got a ways to go. And the fact that this was their first playoff appearance and that they got to the conference finals, two games shy of a finals, and that they're going to bring back some of the young guys, Hunter, Reddish, obviously. And then they went in and drafted a lot of young guys too. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how they make all that fit, how they manage the roster as far as playing time with so many young guys, how they balance it out with the vets, and if everybody's able to stay healthy. Because I kind of feel like one of the things last year that both hurt them but also was helpful in some ways, obviously from a winning standpoint, it hurt them to not have certain guys healthy. I felt like all their key signings got hurt at one point last year, whether it was
yep.
Rondo, Gallinari was in and out of the lineup, Bogdanovich was in and out of the lineup. But I also felt like it simplified their rotation a little bit to have some of those guys out because they needed minutes for all these young guys. And that's a way to find the minutes is certain guys are out. So it'll be interesting this year, like if there's a little bit of a logjam just because they've got so many young guys that need the playing time.
Yeah, that's basically what my cover story about the Hawks was like all about. Like one of the central themes was this need to sacrifice. And as a young player who, I mean, Nick Van Exel had this great quote in the story telling me that when you're in the league, you care about three things in this order. One is playing time, two is money, and three is winning. So that's kind of a little troublesome and an uphill battle for the coaching staff and for some of the veterans to continuously preach the need to seed touches for the greater good, seed minutes for the greater good. But these guys are all trying to establish themselves, and you have DeAndre Hunter, Cam Reddish, and they're 22, 23-year-old players. And at the same time, they need a second All-Star, like at least one more All-Star. So are you going to get that through a trade? Are you going to hopefully develop one of these players to become maybe not as good as Trey, but alongside him in an All-Star capacity? Like, I don't know. That's just an open question. I mean, I asked so many people in the organization about it. Do you believe that there's a second All-Star on this team? And
yeah,
everybody hesitated except John Collins, who was like, I am that guy. And I was like, you are the absolute biggest right. legend. I love it.
Sounds about right. But that was the that was always going to be the hard call to make about whether you throw a max at him. And I think it was like a little bit shy of that in terms of what they gave him. But how do you money. Max out a guy that you aren't sure if he's an All-Star? And I mean, I know statistically everything about his production says you max him. But, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I'm not sure where you would put him as far as where he ranks among fours in the league. But, like, if you're not clearly a top five, top 10 guy, and it's not clear how much more you're going to grow in that regard, how much you even can grow statistically in that regard if you're playing with so many other mouths that need to be fed. So it's their situation's fascinating. The fact that their owner just straight up said there's a pretty good chance we don't bring all these guys back. It also is interesting, by the way, that they did bring most of them back, that roster is pretty similar to what it was. So, but the fact that it's very rare that you have an owner just straight up saying that as the team goes so much further than anyone expected them to. But I think it speaks to the dilemma that they're going to have at some point when they've got to pay Hunter and you're going to have Herter and you're going to have Reddish. Some of these guys are not coming back at some point. And so it's a big year for them for sure.
Yeah, Bogey has a quote in the story that's basically that. Like, we know everybody is not going to be able to stay here, and we just have to, like, can't waste any time. Got to win right now.
It's a fun-ass game of Survivor.
Yeah, exactly. So I think we're in agreement there. The Hawks have the best young core. Shout out to Atlanta. Everybody go pick up the Sports Illustrated NBA preview issue, which is on newsstands October 14th. So here's a question that I thought was obvious when I first saw it, and then I sat down and I started to process it, and I was like, actually, this is really difficult for me to figure out, and I don't know the answer at all. And that question is, which is the best defensive team in the NBA this season? And I think the Lakers were the Lakers number one 2 years in a row, or just... I know they were number one last year, and then the year before that when they win the title, they're just like defense is everything that they are all about, so they might as well have been number one. But I don't think the Lakers are going to have a great defense this season. I think you agree with me there.
Yeah.
So who is the who's the best defensive team in the NBA going to be?
I think it, statistically it'll be Utah, but in reality and the way that we think about it and look at it and the way it feels, I think it'll be Milwaukee. I think that particularly Milwaukee's starting five should be really, really good. I think getting DiVincenzo back will be really helpful to that effort. Drew is a menace. Giannis is a menace. I think Middleton's not the easiest guy to have to go up against. He's not as good on that end as he is on offense, in my opinion. But it's just a really, really great unit. I mean, you got Brook out there, and their system works, you know, for all the things that we were kind of bitching and complaining about with Bud's system. Their defensive system has always been pretty solid. I think it struggles and is stretched pretty in a way that's uncomfortable when they have to play Brooklyn, but I think that's true of anybody's defense against Brooklyn. You know, their bench I'm not as in love with. I think it's kind of piecemeal as far as their defense. You're going to have Bobby Portis out there. Last
Rodney
year,
you had
Bryn Forbes and Rodney Hood and stuff like that. It's not going to work all the time, but I think if you're looking at starting fives and the guys that will play the majority of the minutes and guys that more or less are healthy and in the lineup, give you that cohesion, I think Milwaukee's defense, whether or not they finish as the best defense in terms of efficiency, I'm not sure, you know, but I think as far as their main group, I think Milwaukee's defense will be the best one.
That's a good pick. Can't really quibble. I'm going with the Celtics here, actually. And I just, one of the reasons why I was so high on their offseason was what they did for the defense. And, essentially replacing Kemba Walker with Al Horford in your rotation is a step up. You anticipate a little bit of a jump from Robert Williams, assuming he can stay healthy. You have Marcus Smart, you have Jason Tatum, you have Jaylen Brown. You bring in Josh Richardson, who a couple years ago was just one of the better on-ball guys in the league, just an absolute hound. Dennis Schroeder, when he wants to be, is a pretty good defender on ball. So I love the lineups that they can play, and if you just watch them a little bit in the preseason, and I don't put too much stock in preseason stuff, but they switched like I mean, the Celtics have switched in the past with like-sized lineups, but they were switching quite a bit in that game that I saw in Orlando, on off ball with discipline. And so if that is their mentality and they're going to just have that strategy and they're able to execute it, that scheme, I love the size, I love the length, and there's a lot of intelligence there, a lot of continuity. So I got to go with Boston. I'm not going to lie. I think their defense is going to be great.
I like that pick, though. I mean, it's kind of the opposite of what the Knicks fans probably feel, where they were – I mean, it was Christmas Day for them getting rid of Elfrid Payton as Knicks fans. And for Boston fans, as far as the defense is concerned, losing – I don't know anybody that doesn't like Kemba Walker. Like, if you're frustrated with him because maybe he doesn't produce the way you'd like, that's one thing. So it's not a personal thing with that with him, but as far as losing his defense and not having him on the court on defense, I can imagine Celtics fans, when you look at him and you're able to put Marcus Smart in and plug him back in as a point guard, that you feel like it's probably Christmas Day from a defensive standpoint as far as not having to cover for Kemba defensively. Obviously, he can do some good things offensively, but defensively, you're always going to have to kind of manage him. So it's probably the same way that Celtics fans feel about that.
Right. So I have a couple more questions for you, Chris, that I find to be fascinating. And this one, I think I might be able to predict your answer. And so maybe it isn't that intriguing for the listeners, or at least for me. But who do you think is the most versatile player in the NBA? And I say that knowing who you're going to pick, but I'm going to go with someone else, even though I am probably agreeing with who your selection is.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of an alternate answer here because you know who I'm picking, because I've always, like I said, I feel like I'm sticking to the script hard. It's Giannis again for me, and I think you knew I was going to pick Giannis.
Yep.
You know, I thought about some different people. I think you could at least put KD in that conversation.
Sure.
I think with the right team, you can kind of throw him out there and expect him to help on the back end. You know, I remember that one season he was with Golden State, he was a complete menace defensively and was leading in the league in blocks for a while, which was insane. He wanted to be in that defensive player of the year conversation. I think he kind of fell off a little bit towards the end of that year. And then also Steph got hurt and then he was expected to do more. But the fact that he could just do all those things is pretty crazy. So, I mean, I think you could kind of have him in the conversation, but I think Giannis impacts the game in more ways. Giannis is a point guard. Giannis is a center. Giannis can, you know, can help. Giannis can try to take on the main role on defense, although he didn't really do it with KD. Giannis can go for 50 in a game. Giannis is happy to let somebody come in and play hero at the end of the game if it's Middleton. So there's a versatility there that I feel like we're probably overthinking it if we say it's not him. But I also can appreciate that you're more cool than I am. You're at least going to come up with an answer outside of him just for the sake of the conversation.
So my answer... I mean, the answer is Giannis. That's just like what it is. Maybe LeBron, but that's not who I was thinking of as an alternative. My answer here is Bam Adebayo, and okay. I think like defensively he's already there. Like he was switching on to point guards all of last season. He can protect the rim. He can rebound. He can do everything defensively, really. And so, like, there's really no question marks there. Offensively is where it gets really interesting, where all you really need for him, like, on the ball, he can make plays, he can run fast breaks, he's, you know, a capable dive man in the pick and roll, he runs those DHOs with Duncan Robinson, etc. The thing for him right now is just, like, can you spot up and hit a three, I think? Or can you create your own shot off the bounce consistently? Those are the two things that this season he could make. That's like the area where he could make the leap and, you know, just become a legitimate answer to this question. Right now, without those parts of his game, it's really hard to just say, you know, he's definitely more versatile than someone like Giannis. But I can see him making the type of stride, the type of leap that, that would put him more, because I don't think he even received any votes for this, to be honest with you. And I was kind of like, what? But he's just super versatile, and kind of the definition of this personification of versatility when I think about it in my head. So I'm going with Bam, even though the answer is definitely Giannis.
Okay. Got you. You hit me with one more?
Yeah. One last question. Which team is the most fun to watch? I love this question because it really speaks to your sensibilities as a basketball fan. And we're probably going to do a League Pass-esque preview, ranking all the teams at some point down the line before the season, hopefully. But just like for you, who are you most excited to just watch just from an aesthetic perspective this year?
I really like watching teams grow, so I've been looking forward to watching the Pistons for a while now, which that's not my answer. I feel like you would probably try to check me in somewhere if I said the Pistons for this answer. So it's not my answer, but I really like watching young teams grow. I liked watching them a lot last year, and then they got the number one pick. So I'm really interested in seeing them, but I'm going to maybe a cop out answer here. I think it's the Hawks again with this. Like, I just think that top to bottom, they're really interesting. They've got a young star, superstar, whatever you want to call them. You've got guys that were part of the rotation but not integrated because they were hurt last year. At key points last year that could have gotten them over the top to beat Milwaukee, certainly once Giannis was out, had they been healthy. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I mean, you have a full year with Nate McMillan now, which the knock on him has always been that his teams don't have a high ceiling. And he's got a team now that, in some ways, should have like a pretty limitless one given what they just accomplished. Like, if this is their ceiling, then it's really a shame because they accomplished it in the first year. So, you know, it's a team that plays a lot differently than any team Nate McMillan has ever had before. So I'm really looking forward to watching them play. They, you know, my knock on them before was that they really didn't have much defense to speak of outside of Capella, and that's just not true when they're healthy, when they're fully healthy. So they've got some guys on the wings. They've got a secondary creator in Bogdanovich, who's fantastic when he's at his best. They've got some depth to them. So I'm going to say the Hawks.
Yeah, I love that pick. Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter are both like all defensive team type of wings. They're both ridiculous. Yeah. So we haven't really even seen, obviously those guys were hurt last year in the playoffs, and who knows how far they would have gone or even if it would have been helpful. If they were healthy, which is just a fun little thing to think about when you think about the Hawks. For me, man, this is like a really difficult question. I have like four like tied at the top, and I don't really know which one to pick. But since we haven't mentioned them yet, I'm just going to go with the Denver Nuggets here.
Okay.
I love watching the Denver Nuggets like any other rational basketball fan, I think, just because of Jokic. And anything is possible on any play when he has the ball in his hands. He's just so much fun to watch, and so unpredictable and so precise, and it's sublime. So even though Jamal Murray is out, who's also one of my favorite just like blockbuster athletes who just like brings it in big moments, there's a lot of other, you know, really intriguing qualities to this team. I want to see Michael Porter Jr. this year. I want to see him take a leap potentially, or at least just stabilize himself defensively and then take a leap offensively. It's like really interested to see, you know, Aaron Gordon has a training camp there. He can really embed himself with the system and hopefully maybe even he takes another little bit of a leap there, which I think they, you know, I'm sure they're hoping after they signed him to that extension.
How old is that man? What is he, 27, 26? Is he that old?
35. He's 35, actually.
I'll look it up. Keep talking. Go ahead.
But yeah, you have Aaron Gordon. You have, I think they have a solid bench. Oh my God, I just looked up Aaron Gordon's age. He just turned 26. That is
insane. That's what I was going to say, is that he's a great example of one of those guys that you think has to be 30, but I knew he was still in his like mid to late 20s, and he just turned 26, like literally turned 26 a couple weeks ago. So he's young enough to do it, and it's interesting because I remember feeling really disappointed watching their playoff run when they just needed something from somebody other than Jokic, and I was like, you would hope that Gordon could do the step up, be, you know, more of a second guy, and immediately a legion of Orlando Magic fans were like, ha ha, welcome to our world. And it was like so brutal. It was like 40 of them at least that said that. And it was disappointing to see that he just couldn't do it. So you hope maybe a camp helps with that. And I in my piece today, I mean, when I mentioned the guys that are the biggest X factors in the league this year, Porter was the first guy I mentioned, just because I think particularly for people like you and me that watch so much of the sport, our opinion on him is high, but it's a lot different than other people that just look at how well he shoots and how many points he scores, because he has a lot of developing to do still. Really, yep. I would say to even just to kind of be worth the max extension they just gave him, because he so far has essentially done it as like the best or like one of the best role players in the league with what he's asked to do, which is to spot up, which is to hit a contested jumper every now and then and to play some defense, but not much. He's just a really elite shooter and a really elite finisher, but he's not creating any of the offense himself. He's probably like bottom 5 or 10 percentile in the league in terms of how much of his offense he creates. Now, he has the second highest true shooting percentage in the league among guys that take 10 shots a game or more behind mm-hmm. Durant. But again, those are other people setting him up. And so now that Murray's not there, you would love for him to be your second option, but second options create for themselves normally. So he has a lot of growing to do. So Denver is a great pick. I don't know if you were going to ask this other question that you had on our script here, which was about who's the best passer in the league. I was going to mention Jokic there. I was also going to mention Courtney Vandersloot. Shout out to this guy. I've basically been to more WNBA games in like the last week than I went to NBA games all of last season, just because I'm so proud of my Sky, and I'm hoping that they bring home a title in the next week or so.
That's a wonderful place to close. Shout out to Candace Parker. Yes. Truly remarkable story going on there. And
happy for her.
That's very exciting. So we're going to wrap up there. Thank you so much to all of our listeners. Please keep sending the emails in to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. We will be back next week with two more episodes. And everybody, until then, everybody, please stay safe. And everybody, please continue to enjoy whatever's left of the NBA offseason.
Are you ready to get serious about your weight loss journey? Tried crash and burn calorie restriction? Considering the invasive strategy of GLP-1 injections like Ozempic? Slow down and consider a safer, easier, and long-lasting solution. Golo is clinically proven to work without the dangerous side effects of injections and fad diets. Golo's release helps your body combat the stress of dieting while controlling cravings and hunger. Minimize muscle loss and feel better with Golo. Just take one Golo Release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. It's an effective and affordable plan to lose weight for good. There are no insurance hoops to jump through, no prescription needed, just sensible, effective weight loss and a healthier lifestyle on your terms. Get started on a healthier, happier, and more energetic you at Golo.com. 5 million people have already discovered a better way to lose weight. Join them and go to Golo.com. That's GOLO.com today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.